Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Today we talk about combating the four villains of decision making. Hello, listeners. Welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. This is Bill Quinn, and today is December 19th, 2013. Thanks for joining us for day two of Be Decisive. That's our speed review that we're talking about yesterday and today. And I mentioned at the top of the program, we're going to deal with the four villains in decision making. These actually are the four villains in bad decision making. And we all have to make choices in life, and we all wrestle with decisions. And unfortunately, most of us aren't really good at making decisions. For one thing, most of us are not trained to make decisions. I know that my parents, they didn't train me on decision making. And I know, based upon our discussion yesterday with my panelists, Brian Hagler and Amanda Young-Pierre, your parents didn't train you on decision making, did they?
With certain things, they did, but unfortunately, not everything. I think in the other things, like we talked about yesterday, then I would look to the examples that others would set.
Yes. And a lot of times, their input on decisions would be after the fact, after you made a decision.
That's true.
Bad choice.
Yes.
Or that was a good choice. So, mm-hmm. So we're going to talk about today how to deal with these four villains. But before we get into today's readings, let me get a thought from each one of you from yesterday, a vocabulary term or maybe a concept from yesterday. So, Brian Hagerle.
Hello there.
Good to have you. Give me something from yesterday.
Okay. One thing I liked yesterday was the talk about short-term emotions guiding our decisions. And I think that's important to learn. Thankfully, today we're going to learn a little bit about how we can combat that when you're in the midst of it all.
I was in sales for many, many years back in America, and there was one thing that we did learn is that almost all decisions are emotional, especially buying decisions. I could present all the logic in the world, but it actually came down to how do I get this person excited about my product or service? That is when they will sign. And it's you could go to a car dealership and you find out when people buy. They buy when they are excited. So it's usually they think they're making a logical decision, buying decisions. It's all emotion. Amanda, give me something from yesterday.
Well, I think yesterday we learned that one of the four villains is framing. Actually, that's the first one that was mentioned. And we talked about how we tend to frame the issue narrowly. And I think that's an interesting phrase, frame the issue. We often limit. Framing here means to limit it to mm-hmm. a certain area. And I think that's something that we often do in our life, that we limit something rather than look at the wider options available to us.
We don't always define the problem
right
as well as we can. We actually are probably too simple in our definition of the problem. Mm-hmm. And we talked yesterday about work. A lot of times people just simply define the problem as, I hate my job, or my boss is an idiot, right? And we define it in these narrow, narrow terms without really looking at the whole universe of options, such as the work is challenging. Maybe I need to move into another area just gradually, or maybe I'm not understanding my boss, right? And most people don't understand their boss. They don't understand the challenges that the boss is going through. So there's all sorts of ways of how we narrow our framing, our definition of the problem. And what that does is the narrow framing, the narrow definition narrows our options.
Right.
Yeah. All right. So we talked yesterday about the four villains in bad decision making. And now today we're going to learn about a process that will help you slay the villains.
The WRAP process. In Decisive, the Heath brothers offer a clear step-by-step process for defeating the four villains. The author's first step is to widen your options, to overcome the tendency to narrowly frame issues into binary options. One solution is to multitrack, that is, to actively pursue several options at the same time. The second step is to reality test your assumptions, rather than just looking for confirmation of your preset ideas. One suggestion is to ensure that decision-making includes a devil's advocate step in which counter-arguments are considered. The third step in the anti-bias process is to attain distance before deciding. By giving yourself some distance from the decision, you can diffuse the short-term emotion that might lead you to the wrong choice. Finally, the fourth step in combating the four villains is to prepare to be wrong. Plan for an uncertain future, rather than believing that you can see into the crystal ball.
Okay, we've been talking about our decision-making process and how it is it's something that probably needs some improvement. And today we are going to learn this RAP process, and we find out RAP is an acronym, and we'll talk about the word acronym a little bit later in our reading. And this is a speed review, this article. It is a book that's called Decisive, How to Make Better Choices in Life and Work, and it is by Chip and Dan Heath. And I mentioned yesterday that Chip is a professor at Stanford University, and his brother Dan is a professor also working now at Duke University in North Carolina. So they are quite accomplished, and they've got a lot of experience in this. They've written actually several business books, and so but we're talking about be decisive. So indecisive, the Heath brothers do what?
Well, they offer us a step-by-step process for defeating the four villains. So I believe they're going to teach us here four steps for defeating each of the four villains.
Okay, and we did talk about these four villains yesterday. And now, first, the author's first step is to do what?
To widen your options. We learned yesterday that that first villain is framing, and we tend to limit the issue that we are looking at. And here the author says we need to widen our options, create more, so to overcome the tendency to narrow the option.
Right, and we had used that specialized term yesterday, binary, and we need to – often we make the mistake of framing it into binary options, yes or no, stay or go.
Right.
Hire or fire, instead of looking at the gray areas in life. So one solution is to do what?
Well, that solution would be to multi-track, which means to actively pursue several options at the same time, maybe three, four options, maybe more, maybe five options.
Yes. And by multi-tracking, then, we actually will list three or four or five different options. And now, again, we're talking from a business standpoint here. We talked about, you know, business people or even teams, but a lot of this we're paralleling with our personal lives. And do you ever do this, Amanda, thinking about this multi-track option, and also you too, Brian, do you ever write your choices down?
Yes.
Not as often as I should.
All right. The reason I mention that is for our listeners to consider this. In the business setting, of course, right, we think of people meeting in a conference room and there's 10 people there and some guy standing up at the whiteboard and using a marker and they're listing everything, right? But rarely in our personal life do we go through this whole process. And I always ask people, did you write that down? Because they tell me they're struggling with stuff. They are struggling with things. And I ask them, well, did you write this stuff down? And most of the time the answer is no. But you say you do sometimes.
Yeah, generally because I try to journal. And so when I'm journaling, that's when the thing that I'm, you know, the circumstance or the challenge that I'm trying to overcome will come out during my journaling.
Okay. I'm going to give everybody a real life example because we've been talking about work and personal decisions and things like this. And I think a lot of people can relate to this example I will give you. I had to deal with making a decision regarding two different women and regarding a relationship. And normally we go through this stuff, our head's spinning, our heart's pounding. We're not even sleeping at night. And I actually got to the point where I thought, I've got to write this stuff down. Actually, somebody suggested that to me. I had somebody outside of me say, have you written this stuff down? Hmm. And then this guy actually had me write this stuff down, pros and cons of each situation, pros and cons of this decision. And once I had this stuff written down on paper, I could then see, oh, wow, it helped me clarify the issue. Hmm. And then sometimes things that have got your head spinning, if you write things down, you look at it, and then you're like, oh, that's absurd, or that's ridiculous, or this is a really good choice if I go in this direction. So I suggest to everybody, even regarding your personal issues, personal decisions, write that stuff down on a piece of paper. Second step is what?
To reality test your assumptions rather than just looking for confirmation of your preset ideas. So to take a reality test of the things, the habits, the things you normally do, your tendencies, see if they're really going to hold up.
Okay. We did talk about that yesterday as far as assumptions and predispositions affecting our choices. So this one is saying, give it a reality test. Test it out in the real world. One suggestion is to what?
One suggestion is to ensure that decision-making includes a devil's advocate step. And a devil's advocate is someone who supports the opposite decision or argument that you are trying to decide upon. And they do that by making a counter-argument.
Okay. All right. Devil's advocate. Did you ever have to do that?
Yes. I think when I decided to leave the police, part of me wanted to leave the police, but I had to really think about, like you mentioned, the pros and cons of, is this a good decision? And so I had to put myself in the shoes of, okay, imagine you were staying and compared to if you would leave. And that helped me see, well, really, would I enjoy staying or would I enjoy leaving more?
Okay, you have to look at it from both sides.
Right.
Right. And then also you have to consider the counter arguments.
That's true. And that makes me think of another example in my life that I always have this dream of going back to school for language school. And then every time I bring that up to a lot of the people in my life, they play the devil's advocate and give counter arguments. And they say, well, what are you really going to do with that, Brian? Mm-hmm. Are you going to use that to make money? And I'm like, no, I just want to get more education for fun.
In my life, what I've been dealing with the last couple of years is, do I go back to America? Hmm. And in my heart, in my own sentimental way, I want to, because that is my home. But I do have a couple of people around me that ask me, okay, what's that look like, Bill? Hmm. And they want me to describe, what is that? How's that going to work? What would I do work-wise? Where do I live? What are my expenses? What's the future look like? And then instead of having a romantic perception of what this returning home is going to be like, I then have a very realistic viewpoint of, there's good things about it, but there are also – it brings out there are some bad things about it. Mm. I would also in a different way, we might have been on debate teams back in high school or college. And one of the great exercises for everybody to do is – take the opposite position of what position you favor. So it might be on any issue that you can think of. There are tons of issues in the world. Take the opposite issue and then build your argument up. So, for instance, in America, one of the issues is gun control. Some people are in favor of it. Some people are not in favor of it. And so whatever you are in favor of, it would be a great example for you then to take the opposite position, and then it will help you understand your issue even better, make the best choice on that. So if you're thinking about leaving your job, take the position of your boss. See things from your boss's perspective. So that's the counter argument. Third step, Amanda.
The third step in the anti-bias process is to attain distance before deciding. So by giving yourself some distance from the decision, you can get rid of or reduce, diffuse means to reduce, the short-term emotion that may lead you to making a wrong choice.
Okay. Give me an example or two of distance.
Well, I can really give you a good example from my life now, because as I seek to possibly move again to another apartment, Yes, this is a decision that's very tough because you want to attain distance before deciding, but the pressure is on and you have to decide often within half an hour. You have to decide, do I want to rent this place or not, because other people are waiting to get in.
Yeah, yeah. Now, distance can take many forms. It can be a geographical distance sometimes. It does help us to step away geographically from a situation, from a person, from, anything, actually. I'll tell you what, that's a great way of evaluating a relationship. Put some distance between you and that person. Try to do it amicably and peacefully and just say, look, I need a little bit of space, and spend some time apart from that person. I don't know if some of our listeners might remember Billy Leonard. And Billy was here many years ago, worked on Let's Talk in English, but Billy fell in love with somebody here locally, and they had a really good relationship, but their minister at the church suggested they spend 6 months apart from each other, not even see each other, don't talk to each other. So there was nothing, no phone calls, no texting, no seeing, no dating, and the minister was just testing them to see how they really felt about each other, because sometimes we can overwhelm the other person, and we get really, really all woven in with the other person, and we really don't think clearly then. So what the minister was doing was just, he was saying, put some distance there, and he's just putting some social space in between the people. So you can have all sorts of distance, and I would also say time. Like I said before, when you get angry, wait 24 hours. I have had emails that have infuriated me, and I learned the hard way. I now have to wait 24 hours when I get an email that infuriates me. And I mentioned yesterday I thought I was really smart when I was 25 years old. But when I was 25 years old, I would get emails that angered me, and then I would fire back immediately with my own bomb, and pretty soon I had a war going. I have now learned 24 hours. I'm putting some distance time-wise between that decision and my emotions. All right. Finally, the fourth step.
The fourth step is to prepare to be wrong. Plan for an uncertain future rather than believing that you can see into the crystal ball.
Okay, crystal ball.
Crystal ball is like a magic glasses. You think you can see what's going to happen in the future.
Do you ever think about that, Amanda? I might be wrong.
Yes.
Yeah?
I do.
Okay.
Mainly because, well, past experience, I have been wrong. Mm-hmm. So I think because of being wrong in the past, it's taught me, you may be wrong in the future too. So not to make that stop me or live in fear of doing something, but rather to just have a reality check. Okay, am I being realistic? And also allowing the flexibility, like it says here, for uncertainty.
Yeah. All right. And there are so many decisions that we do make in life that sometimes we do the best we can. And we find out maybe 6 months or a year later, we made a wrong decision.
That's right. And maybe if we're more open to thinking we could be wrong, maybe we won't be so quick to frame our issues narrowly.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, and this might involve maybe a job.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times people might look at a job and say, hey, I'm going to make this decision. I'm going to take this job. And it might be for more money. A lot of times people will make a job decision based upon more money. And it looks great. And then 6 or 12 months later, they're like, oh, man, this job is killing me. I don't like this job. I'm not sleeping at night. I'm stressed out. Yes, I'm getting more money. And so you have to realize that I might be making the wrong decision in a case like that. If you do make a wrong decision, what do you do?
Then you take some distance and allow yourself some time out to realize you've made a mistake.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You can look back at things and say, all right, I made a mistake in this. So you don't have to stay married to that bad decision forever. Okay. And when I say married, I'm not talking about marriage between husband and wife. I'll get to that in a moment. But I'm saying if you make a bad decision, especially like regarding work, give up your ego and look, say, I made a mistake. Okay? And I need to change the situation. So that's regarding work. So regarding marriage or a relationship like that, I think we put a lot of pressure on ourselves expecting perfection in the other person, right?
Mm-hmm. That's right. And we often forget that the other person is growing as well and they're learning how to live.
Yeah. And so making a decision regarding your relationships or your marriage are different from business. So if you make a bad decision regarding a job, you do have greater flexibility to walk away from that bad decision about a job. In a marriage, dealing with it is different. And you've got other tools to deal with that, communicating and trying counseling and working on things to make that marriage work. So, you know, realize when you do go into decisions. I've also realized that now that I often say that to myself. I might be making a mistake, but I have to live with that. And I have to accept the fact that I might make a mistake. Okay, let's have our last reading for today.
This four-step process, widen your options, reality test your assumptions, attain distance before deciding, prepare to be wrong, is summarized in the acronym WRAP, which, the authors note, conveys a process that wraps around your usual way of making decisions, helping to protect you from some of the biases we've identified. As in their two previous bestsellers, Switch and Made to Stick, the Heaths build on extensive academic research to create an engaging, focused process for resolving the issue at hand. Since there is no more important an issue for any of us than making the right choices at the right time, however, Decisive is a book that should reach far beyond the business audience.
Bill Quinn here with Amanda Young-Pierre and Brian Hagerle. We're on our last reading of Be Decisive Speed Review. You can find it on pages 28 and 29 in your Advanced magazine. And we are talking about the WRAP process, aren't we, Brian?
That's right. Here we learn what WRAP stands for. The W stands for widen your options. The R stands for reality test your assumptions. The A stands for attain distance before deciding. And lastly, the P stands for prepare to be wrong.
Okay. And I had mentioned earlier in our reading that it is an acronym, right?
That's right. And an acronym is where you take the first letter of every phrase and you make it into its own word.
Yeah. All right. So, and we've got, that's what we've got, WRAP. And the writers have wisely chosen that. It's easy to remember it. And the authors also note that it what?
Wraps around your usual way of making decisions.
All right. So it conveys this process that wraps around how we make decisions. So that's kind of witty, isn't it?
It is very witty. It has kind of multiple meanings going on here.
Mm-hmm. All right. And so, and again, I like what they say here. Decision-making is a process. Too often we try to shortcut that decision-making process, and it is a process. And if we really just take our time and calm down, we can make better decisions. So, and that's part of it. It's going to help protect us from what?
Some of the biases we've identified. And we learned yesterday the word bias. The second villain in our list is confirmation bias. It's when we have an assumption or a predisposition towards something. And this WRAP acronym will help us protect us from these biases.
Yeah, and often our biases are subconscious. We're not even aware of how they are influencing our decision. Right. Give you one example. For instance, maybe in the corporate world, for years, there was a bias against women, promoting women into management. And a lot of people had let that affect their decisions. Or maybe even certain minorities, there was a bias. And people would be in denial about this, but that actually would impact the decisions in many ways that they made. So be aware of the biases that might be impacting your decisions. And now we do learn about a couple of the books that they had written before.
That's right. The Heaths have written good bestsellers before, two of them, Switch and Made to Stick. So these are authors that have had much success so far.
All right. And so in this book, in Decisive, How to Make Better Choices in Life and Work, the Heaths build on their extensive academic research to create an engaging, focused process for resolving the issue at hand. Engaging, making something, meaning something that's interesting and also enlightens us, helps us out, and keeps us involved in reading it. So it's like once you pick it up, you can't set it down. You're so excited to read this book. And what's our last paragraph say?
Well, since there is no more important an issue for any of us than making the right choices at the right time, Decisive is a book that should reach beyond just the business audience. So because decision-making is so critical and so vital in everyday life, this book should not only reach out just to the business people, but to everybody.
And we have talked about that for the past couple of days because, yes, it's normally aimed at the business audience, but we talked about many personal examples and how this would impact us. Relationships, schools that we're going to go to, our major, our children, decisions we would make regarding raising kids, having kids, finances. Remember, finances are extremely emotional. And so this would help you dealing with all of these things. So before we sign off, let me get a final thought from each one of our panelists.
I like the WRAP process in that it helps people become more objective when they make decisions, to make decisions we can all live with.
I also think that this process just really helps people understand the way that they're actually making decisions right now, like analyze what are you doing right now when you make a decision and how can I improve my decision making for the future. I would also encourage people not only just to keep this article to themselves, but share it with your friends and family too.
Yeah. And I was just thinking also, as we have gone through this article, one thing I had yet to mention is the spiritual aspect of decision making. And I have really been struggling with some decisions in the last couple of years. And I have actually, in addition to trying to be logical, have friends give me some good input, also been doing a lot of praying about things, asking God for His input in my decisions, and actually turning a lot of my decisions over to God and saying, just guide me, and realizing that, sometimes we do need the assistance of a higher power, of God, and guiding us through many of our difficult decisions. So factor that into your processes, and I hope this helps you listeners as far as your journey. We make little decisions each day. So focus on the little decisions, and they actually will make the bigger decisions easier. Thanks for joining us. Come on back next time. This is Bill,
Amanda,
and Brian
saying goodbye.
Goodbye.